Don't bet against a better team at home. I don't care who got it.
Free massages.
Oh, at least
say at least one more time. You can't say stuff like this on podcasts, all right?
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for January 20th, 2010. I'm Kyle Maestri, filling in for our host, Adam Berry, who is currently on the road to Arkansas, a long, winding road that it is, stopping in Birmingham overnight, but he unfortunately can't be with us. He was unwilling to Skype us all in while recording from his Echo. So, I'll be filling in, and with me today are Bobby Colovey.
I miss Berry.
You miss Barry?
I do.
It's not the same without
him. Yeah, it's not. It's going to be weird when he's gone from the Alligator. I mean, Bobby should just hang around and try to take over this job permanently.
Agreed. And Phil Kegler?
Who are you talking about? I don't even know a Dale.
Well, Dale Barry's not with us either today. But if he were, he'd like to start with Gators basketball, I'm sure. So that's what we're going to do.
Let's make it quick, though.
They just beat LSU. I don't have the score, something that Adam definitely would have had if he were hosting the show.
Double digits,
it was around 15 points. They beat him at home. Thoughts on the game? Anybody who watched it?
LSU's really bad. That was one of my first thoughts.
Absolutely.
Florida pulled away in the second half. Looked all right, but it was kind of a game they needed to win. Not necessarily like it was a winner. You're not gonna make the tournament, but just kind of turn around the momentum, get some positive confidence going on.
Absolutely.
For those who don't know, the score is 72-58. I know that off the top of my head.
72-58.
It's not like there's a computer right behind me.
Right.
The big thing was that Macklin had a big game.
Mm-hmm. So Macklin did do well, unfortunately.
Yeah.
A rare occurrence.
Yeah, they need him to do that more often. Otherwise, they're gonna be mediocre the rest of the year.
Yeah, LSU is one of about three teams in the SEC that are really terrible. I'd say them, Auburn, and Georgia are all pretty bad teams. So it was good for them to get a win at home against a team like that. One of the things I thought was interesting, though, too, watching the game is they jumped out to it. Did you guys watch it, first of all?
No. I was with you.
Did you keep up with it? All right, Phil watched it with me. That's right.
I was not watching.
Bob was indisposed. All right. They jumped out to a huge lead, gave it all up pretty much. LSU stormed back, but then they came out in the second half and put it away again. So is it a problem a little bit that they can't just put games away?
Yeah, no. I mean, I think sometimes that's slightly a product of depth if they're getting really tired at some points in the game, especially in the backcourt when Kenny Boynton and Ermin Walker have to play so many minutes. Sometimes you can just you let down a little bit, even if you don't want to, just because of fatigue. And yeah, I think it's a mental thing. I mean, that's a lot deadlier on the road. You definitely don't want to let, if you're on a on the road against a team that's far inferior, you don't want to let them stick around because the crowd will get involved and stuff. Being at home, obviously, that didn't matter too much for Florida.
Barry just did a story today about their lack of depth, I guess. At the beginning of the season, I know Billy Donovan was talking about how great it was, that they can finally do 5-on-5 scrimmages. Well, he can no longer do 5-on-5 scrimmages. They're back down to 4-on-4 and 3-on-3s. And I guess preparing for LSU, they had Ray Shipman playing like as one of their big forwards, who's like, I think, 6'7", 6'8", and Shipman's 6'5", 215, and the other guy was weighing 240. So they're struggling to recreate the people they're going to face.
Right, yeah, they're going 4-on-4 in practice now for the majority of the time. You talked about Macklin had a big game. Flash in the pan or signs of things to come for Vernon Macklin?
I swear Vernon Macklin has one move. It is like two dribbles and a right hook.
Right.
So once I can't imagine that teams are going to continue to let him take that shot. And I think if you take away that hook shot, all he has is the putbacks.
I mean, you know, I have much more faith in Macklin. At this point, it's only faith in myself that I won't be wrong. And then Macklin won't make me wrong.
All right,
I'm going to say that this is a flash of things to come.
So sign of things to come for Bob. Phil?
No. This
flash in the pan. Yeah, I'm also going flash in the pan. Yeah. My thoughts on Macklin are pretty out there.
At the risk of sounding ignorant, who's LSU's best big man?
Not, good question,
not one of
Phil.
Not a big timer by any stretch.
No, their best players were their point guard and forward, Tasman Mitchell. So
you know, we'll get a good look at Macklin, though, on Thursday when they play at Arkansas, going against Michael Washington. Is his name?
Yes.
He's still there, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Okay.
Good job.
Well, it was a little bit of a surprise. I remember coming to the SC tournament last year, and I didn't remember if he stayed or went.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's one of, I think, a handful of pretty good big men in the SEC, mm-hmm. So Macklin versus him could be an interesting matchup.
Yeah, Washington's a good player. They also have a two-guard, I think, Rodney Clark.
Yes.
And his name is spelled R-O-T-N-E-I.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, the most ridiculous name I've ever heard. But he scored 50 in a game, actually, earlier this year. Three-point shooter.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's really just so much of a shooter from what I said. I remember watching him last year, did not realize he was that good at all. But they also, for the very beginning of the year, they didn't have Courtney Fortson, which I believe is their point guard.
Their point guard, yeah.
There was some off-the-court issues, I believe. I think he's now back. Arkansas is one of those teams that, like, sometimes hangs around with really good teams, but then they really struggle and lose against teams they shouldn't also. I don't have their schedule in front of me. But, I mean, I think it'll be a bit of a tough test going into Fayetteville for Florida. I would not be surprised if they lost.
Yeah, and I just looked up the stats. In the SEC Championship tournament against Arkansas, Michael Washington scored 18 points.
Yeah.
Sorry, 15 points and 18 rebounds.
Yeah.
So, clearly Macklin has...
Yeah, his hands full.
Yeah, and see, Rodney Clark shot 3-for-10 from 3-point range in that game. So he's very streaky.
Yeah, you just you can't let him get loose from three. I mean, I don't think he's not a scorer who can score in a lot of different ways. He's
no
shooter. It'd be like Lee Humphrey standing behind the line hitting 10 threes in a game. Like, that's pretty much what he did to get his 50. So, I mean, he's a really great shooter, but I think you put Boynton on him man-to-man, and you'll probably be okay. But
Just don't play zone and then lose him.
Exactly.
That would be the recipe for disaster.
So all that being said, what do you guys think? They come away with a win tomorrow?
I'm getting colder and colder a little bit. See, I'm going they lose.
You're saying they lose. Okay.
I'll say they pull it out, but Michael Washington still goes off.
I say they win, and they win impressively.
Right.
So I'll go by more than double digits.
Wow.
They can come away with it.
After that, though, they're turning right around, and they got to come back to Gainesville and play South Carolina on Saturday. So they're going to get one day off, and that's going to be a travel day for them.
Mm-hmm.
So that lack of depth and all the injuries could hurt them against South Carolina.
Yeah, no, that's certainly really interesting. That's last year's schedule, Bob. Okay. Billy Donovan, I think, talked about this earlier in the week. Because of the SEC's new TV contracts with ESPN, they had to change some of the days they play on. Because I think in years past, during the regular season at least, they would never have this type of turnaround, like a Thursday, Saturday. They always played like Tuesday or Wednesday and then Saturday or Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be certainly an interesting test. It is kind of a good barometer if you are a tournament team going forward, getting used to playing, you know, with one day's rest, even though in the tournament, obviously, you wouldn't have to travel. But, I mean, it'll be interesting to see the depth. That could also play a problem in this game.
I mean, the big two to keep your eye on are Boynton and Irvin Walker, because they're going to be playing over 30 minutes, and they're going to have to come right around and play another, 34, 35 minutes in 2 days.
So. Yeah, it'd be nice if they could blow out Arkansas a little bit and rest those guys for the second game. But who knows what's going to happen, really.
I mean, because on Saturday, they got to go up against Devin Downey.
God forbid they get good minutes from Shipman. It seems like it's been 4, 5, 6 games since he's done anything productive for them. So,
right. The downfall of Ray Shipman is really just mind-boggling to me.
Was there really ever like a... There was like an appearance of Ray Shipman, but I would never say like... He was, like, rising too much this season.
I thought he looked good the first couple games of the season, but obviously that's not exactly stellar competition. So, who knows? But he's a guy who can do a lot of different things if he can just put it together and, you know, make some significant contributions on the court. Any other thoughts on basketball before we move on?
No, not a whole lot.
No? Everyone good? All right, let's hit the next subject, which is going to be the early entrance into the NFL draft. The deadline passed on Friday, so you're either in or you're out at this point, and there's no more evaluating your paperwork, doing all that kinds of stuff. I think Bob's got some info, some numbers for us. Why don't you hit us with a breakdown?
Well, there's going to be 53 players. So everyone was talking about, I mean, I kind of was in this boat too, that everyone's leaving. Everyone's going to the pros because 2011 is so uncertain for the NFL. There's talks about rookie cap. There's talks about if this doesn't get settled, there's going to be a holdout. All this is happening. Everyone thought there was going to be a big influx of juniors leaving. There weren't. It was up from 2009, but it tied 2008 at 53.
Which was a record, though.
Yeah, it was a record high, but...
But no, it wasn't higher
a lot more than the record, and there weren't.
Mm-hmm.
Let's think. The Gators that left, there's Joe Hayden, Aaron Hernandez... Major Wright, Carlos Dunlap, and Aaron Hernandez, all of which except Major... Oh, wait.
Pouncey.
So we got 6. I was just given... Or I named someone twice. One of the two.
All right, hold on. Hayden.
It was Hayden.
Hernandez.
Wright.
Pouncey.
Dunlap. Pouncey. I named someone twice.
Dunlap. Pouncey.
I think I named someone twice.
Seems like
I'm
getting
I'm
five
near
here.
Positive it's five because okay. I read in a story. I'm 99% sure that five is the most early entrance from anywhere in the country.
Okay.
Florida is the top. Nice. And five pretty good players. And, I mean, although I think we'd all agree four of those aren't really shocking, it would just be the departure of Major Wright was a bit baffling.
Very shocking. I'd say that they've got three first-rounders in that group. Pouncey probably will be a second, third-rounder.
Yeah, there's no first-round line.
Major Wright, who knows? I'll say this, he's not in Mel Kiper's top five juniors, and all five of those juniors announced that they were going to go into the draft. So, according to Mel Kiper, he's at least below a number five.
For
a
safety spot?
No, just for juniors.
Wait, what?
So, no, just out, like, because he, for some reason, he's not in Scouts Inc.'s thing, so I'm only going off Mel Kiper, and he has the top five at each position.
Yeah, so
but
safeties.
He has seniors and then the category for juniors.
So he's not a top five junior safety.
He's not a top five junior safety. Okay. So he might
That's
even be below some of those seniors in the top five.
The way you said it before, it sounded like overall juniors.
Yes.
So. And one of the seniors is Taylor May, so you know he's below him.
Right.
So he's probably in the 8 to 10 range, I'd say. And that could land him anywhere, probably fourth to seventh round. This probably is not a very good decision for him. But who knows? Maybe he was given some encouraging news by some random NFL person. I don't know.
Yeah, weird decision for Major Wright. I thought for sure he was going to stay. Also, it seems like he has a really good relationship with the coaching staff. They all really like him. It definitely wasn't an Ahmad Black thing where there may have been friction there or something like that.
Who's coming back?
Yes, oddly enough. So I'm surprised that he jumped, but who knows what round he'll go in. He'll be one of those, like, you know, Lewis Murphy guys from last year. You could see him going anywhere from third to fifth to sixth, somewhere in that range. The other guys, like Bob said, I assume the three you're talking about, we think Hayden Hernandez and Dunlap will all go in the first round.
Right now, Scouts Inc. has Hayden as the fourth best overall prospect. Mm. So, I mean, they're saying top five for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think Joe Hayden's good, but like his stock this year, and he played really well, so I'm not saying it's undeservedly, but like his stock really just shot up like from his play of 2009. It's crazy.
I think the only question mark out of those three would be Hernandez. If Jermaine Grisham kind of comes back and proves he's healthy and two teams don't draft tight ends, I could see him going in the second round. Yeah. I don't know what you guys think about that. But
yeah, I mean, I would have him behind Grisham.
I think Kiper has jumped Hernandez over Grisham.
I think I saw that too.
So, I mean, clearly Hernandez having, you know, being able to play this whole year and Grisham not really obviously helps Hernandez. And he's got one more year of tape. I guess it's the same year since Grisham was a senior. But, you know, he's got a more recent year of tape to show scouts. So, though, I mean, I think Hernandez is going to stay in that first round. It's probably going to be in the second half, but still first round money is first round money.
So you add spikes to that list and you're looking at three or four first round draft picks for the Gators, another three or four in the second round, probably depending on what happens with Pouncey, Tebow, and guys like that. So who knows what's going to happen. I'm interested to watch the draft this year. I don't usually like it, but with so many guys that we were around all year eligible, it's going to be really interesting, I think.
Yeah, no, definitely. But I mean, you know, they're getting restocked by one of the greatest recruiting classes of all time, Kyle.
Right. Before they even step on the field. So. Yeah.
I mean, look at the past, like, great recruiting classes, and those classes have led them to national championships. So, I mean, recruiting classes, you know, it starts with the recruiting class, obviously. You've got to get the players in, and then you got to do something with those players. But it definitely helps with the players they're bringing in.
So other guys that we're talking about, you know, in the draft, Senior Bowl's coming up. Riley Cooper's going to play in that. Guys who were invited to the Combine. Also, Cooper was invited to go to the Combine. Brandon James was. What do we think? Where do we think those guys are going to end up in the draft? Or
Brandon James, I'm going to say it right now, he goes undrafted.
Yeah.
I don't care that he got invited to the Combine. He's going undrafted. Cooper, I see him going around where Lewis Murphy goes, fourth, maybe a little bit lower, fifth or sixth round. But I don't see him much higher than that. Who else is going? Tebow's going. We're putting him in the second, third round.
And Jermaine Cunningham's going.
Jermaine Cunningham. I think he's a second, third rounder as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Spikes, who I think, I'm going to say right now, I think he slips in the second round.
All right.
I think he kind of Ray Maluga's it and slips into the second.
I pretty much agree with that.
With the Spike stuff? Or with everything?
With pretty much everything. Okay. I mean, I think Riley Cooper, as you said, is kind of like a third, fourth guy. I'm just thinking of guys that can, like, really show off at the Combine. Cause,
Riley Cooper was the third, fourth guy? Bob?
I said fifth, sixth.
Yeah. Oh, my bad. I'm going to say right. third, fourth.
Okay. Right.
My apologies. Third.
Your own stance here, Phil.
Yeah, all right. That's me. Jermaine Cunningham, I think, will be anywhere from like third to fifth round. I'm really a bad evaluator of sometimes right. certain positions of talent, and it just depends on needs and all that right. kind of stuff.
Defensive end's very loaded this year, so, I mean, he could drop.
There you go.
But there's a lot of good juniors. That's where Carlos Dunlap hurt himself, is because he was... He might be the most potential out of all the juniors coming out, and any defensive end in the draft. But they were all kind of vying for like the top, you know, 3-4 defensive ends. And him just putting a negative thing on his resume just hurts him a little bit. Just because there's so many good defensive ends that if you can draft one that doesn't have, you know, an arrest like you know a record, obviously you're gonna probably want to go with that person. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so you got a pretty good feel where we think everyone's going. I think Spikes definitely sticks in the first round. I think he can do too much, and teams are going to like him there. I agree with what Bobby said about Brandon James, unless he runs a 4.3 somehow, which he's not going
to
do.
I'm going to say he needs to run a 4.2.
Even faster?
Yeah.
I think that's what teams are looking for, some sick time where they can justify burning a sixth-round pick on a kick returner. So unless he can do that. I don't think he's going to get drafted.
You don't think he's going to play receiver in the NFL,
No,
Kyle?
I think he's a little small to play receiver in the NFL, but who knows, right? I mean, you got to get him his touches every game. So let's talk about a guy who was not invited to the Combine. I don't think we've talked about this yet.
I think pretty much all of our favorite
Sadler.
Gators.
Yeah.
Ryan Stamper, outside linebacker, not invited to the Combine.
Based on the list of people, it seems like an outrage. Like, I mean, I know Brandon James might run some ridiculous time, but if you're gonna invite Brandon James, you can invite Ryan Stamper. Like, I don't know necessarily how the cutoffs are, but I have to believe Ryan Stamper is at least worth a look at the NFL Combine.
You know my stance on it. I love Ryan Stamper. I think he's great, but he's not what the NFL is looking for, unfortunately. I mean, you would think that they're looking for a great linebacker, but they're not. They're looking for a great linebacker who's bigger than Ryan Stamper or faster than Ryan Stamper. He offers them nothing, so I wasn't too surprised he didn't get invited. He's going to be playing, I think, in the East-West Shrine Game.
It's on
Saturday. So he's going to have to impress whatever coaches are there. That's who he needs to go after. He needs to impress those guys. And because, I mean, it takes one team to draft you, so he's got to impress one coach pretty much.
Yeah, obviously, I'm a huge Stamper fan. I was very upset by the news. But hopefully he'll stick with somebody, just make it to camp, impress some coaches. But I just don't see how he doesn't have a better pro potential than Brandon James. I don't know.
Yeah, so. So I'm not even fighting that maybe he should be drafted or where he should be drafted. Right. But going to the Combine, like,
yeah,
I don't know. I feel like the level... In my mind, to be able to do that is, like, so low.
He definitely should have made it over Brandon James. I mean, which is, like, speed? I really don't know what the thought is.
Right?
I mean, he was an All-American last year.
Kick returners are kind of in vogue now, though, the last, like, 5, 6, 7 years. Like, the Dante Hall, Devin Hester era, it's like people like drafting kick returners in the late round, see what they can get.
I will say, though, Stamper will also have another chance to impress at U.S. Pro Day. That's usually in March.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll definitely benefit with being... on a team with so many guys that have pro prospects. I don't know if everybody will work out at U.S. Pro Day, but when you have scouts that are going to come out, I'm sure at least somebody decent will work out, whether it's Spikes, Cunningham, Tebow, maybe some of those guys work out for scouts, and then maybe Ryan Stamper's there working out and they take a glance at him.
The Pro Day, I'm going to say, doesn't help him much. He might want to not do too much at the Pro Day.
Really?
Because he's not going to run a good 40 time. He's not going to work out probably in a lot of things, in the speed stuff that they're testing. He's probably not going to do very well in those things. He's just going to hurt himself. But in the East-West Shrine Game, we can actually play football. He can be on the field. He can show how smart he is on the field and how, you know, his great football sense. That's going to help him. That's what coaches are going to see, that, hey, when he's on the field, he's good. He might not put up, you know, he might not be running a 4.5, 40 for a linebacker, but he's going to make plays when he is on the field.
Yeah, I agree with Bob there. I think he's going to need to show that he can play. So a lot of film and a lot of coaches' recommendations for him. Hopefully we'll get him onto a team for next year. So we'll talk about this more, obviously, as the draft approaches and we all kind of learn a little more about where things sit. But for now, let's move on to something completely different. Let's talk about it's spring. A lot of small sports going on campus. Football is pretty much done with. We're going to have spring practice soon enough. Football's never really done with recruiting and stuff. But it's as done as it's going to be. Other than men's hoops, which kind of runs campus during the spring, gets a lot of our attention. There's a lot of other great small sports that go on. And I just want to take time. We'll all pick kind of three athletes that if you don't know, you should know out there because they play significant roles for good teams for the Gators. So we'll start with Phil.
All
Why don't
right.
you give us a couple names to look for?
We're going
year.
One at a time. I'm giving all three of mine.
No, let's rotate. That's okay, too much Phil at one time
right,
for
yeah,
me. So
they can't all handle that. my first guy, and these are in no particular order.
Right.
I'm going with Tommy Toledo from the baseball team, a pitcher who missed most of, if not all of last season. With arm surgery, but was pretty good 2 years ago, and I think he could play a pretty important role, maybe number two pitcher, I guess, for this year's team. So I think Tommy Toledo could be, especially if he's really good, I think that could help the team.
Yeah, if he's healthy, he can be an ace. He was, a third-round draft pick coming out of high school. He was drafted real high, decided to come play college ball, contributed his freshman year, blew out his arm, so hopefully he bounces back, but definitely a good pick. Bob, why don't you hit us with a name over there?
Yeah, I'm going to get this one out of the way because there's no way I say it right. Miriam Kevkishvili.
That's close.
Yeah,
close.
We don't know, yeah. So we're going to say that's close. It looks good by her spelling, but who knows? She's on the track and field team. She's a shot putter. She's a three-time NCAA champion, and she's probably going to win her fourth title this year. She's setting her – I'm pretty sure she holds a UF record, and she beat it in her first meet this semester. So it's looking good for her. She's pretty much dominated shot put for the last 3-4 years.
Absolutely. Definitely somebody who's been in the news for as long as she's been on campus. So I'm going to go softball, my favorite sport. I'm going to go Asia Pakulba, second baseman for the Gators. This is going to be her junior season, unbelievably.
Wow, I feel like she's been here forever, yeah.
Really? I covered her when she was a freshman, so it's
yeah,
one of those situations for me. But
you mean Ali Pakulba?
Yeah, Ali Pakulba. Now, Asia Pakulba, great all-around player. She does everything. She's probably the fastest player on the team. She'll steal 30 bases probably for the season. She'll also hit you 10 home runs. She hits a bunch of doubles. Good fielder, really just one of the best all-around players I've seen in any sport. She hits for a really high average. She'll leave as a record holder in a bunch of categories by the time she's done. And for my money, the best swing on campus in baseball or softball. So somebody I really like to watch play.
All right. I'm going to track and field again. I'm going to with senior sprinter Calvin Smith. He's been really a standout sprinter his entire time here in Florida. But last year especially, he grew into, I believe he's on the 4x100 team and 4x400 team, which plays very well at Nationals last year. He's like a 13-time All-American. He's going to leave with a bunch of sprinting records here from Florida. And the men track and field team's getting like progressively a lot better. They're recruiting good guys. I think they're ranked in the top five right now. So they were unhappy. Like, they were in the running for an NCAA title last year, and I think they'll have a shot at it again this year.
I'm going to the gymnastics team with Amanda Castillo. She's been great. She's a senior now, but she's kind of taken the back seat to Corey Hartung and Melanie Sinclair the last few years. Melanie Sinclair is no longer on the team due to her arrest, and Corey Hartung graduated. So this is her team this year. They're always good. They have a lot of freshmen, but it's going to be up to her to kind of carry the team for a while, till all the freshmen get up to speed.
Yeah, it's definitely her team at this point, a name that we all recognize from being around. So we'll see if she can keep the run of what's the final six going.
They always get into the Super Six.
Super
I can't
six.
Remember how many years in a row, but they always get there and are considered. I guess last year they weren't really considered one of the favorites, but they're always considered one of the favorites and never win.
All right, I'm going to hit the pool with this one. I'm going to do Sean Frazier, senior swimmer. From the Cayman Islands, as we found out, I thought Bahamas, I was mistaken, swam in the Olympics the last time. It's really the swimmers, they have a lot of like Olympic competitors who swim for other countries sometimes in the United States. Gemma Spofforth is somebody on the women's team, so it's cool to see those guys on TV, Sean Frazier, and then he gets in the pool for UF and competes and is, pretty dominant across the college landscape.
Yeah, no, I definitely remember that when the 2008 Summer Olympics were going on. Florida has a lot of athletes. They don't always, as you said, compete for the U.S. team because U.S. team's so stacked in swimming. But you'll see a lot of them, as you said, Spofforth and Britton. I believe also Greg Troy, the U.F. swimming coach, is an assistant with the national team.
He is, yeah.
So that kind of helps both in recruiting and, he's a really good coach. So people want to come swim for him.
Absolutely.
My last athlete, I'm staying men's track and field. This name's really way off the radar, but I think he's going to be important as the men's track and field season keeps going. Gray Horn. He was a freshman last year. I remember covering him seeing his progress when I was here over the summer as sports editor. And he won the SEC outdoor decathlon title as a freshman,
wow.
which was shocking, especially so because Florida has never won an SEC decathlon title. And so you can only expect great things from him as he continues to grow.
Also, all-name team, Gray Horn,
yeah,
for sure.
Great
yeah. name. Absolutely great name. Bob?
My last pick is possibly my favorite athlete at UF. It's baseball god, Preston Tucker. if you did not happen to see him last year, you're going to want to watch him this year. It was his freshman campaign, and he pretty much dominated. I'm pretty sure he won the Triple Crown for the Gators, led the team in batting average, RBI, and home runs. So probably going to do it again this year. They've lost some people, not too many, I don't think, as batters, but it's still going to be on him to provide most of the power for the team.
Yeah, he's their best hitter at this point. And you hear a lot of people talk about baseball players, like the ball just comes off their bat different than everyone else's. He's one of those guys. The ball just jumps off his bat. So keep an eye out for him. I'm going with another home run hitter, but from the softball field, Francesca Anaya, senior.
She's Kyle's best friend.
Yes, personal friend. She's also the already UF's all-time leading home run hitter.
Yeah, that's
after
crazy.
Three seasons. One of those seasons, she spent half of it, you know, on the DL with a torn ACL. She played all last year with a torn ACL. She's finally healthy, ready to go. So I don't think 25 home runs is totally out of the question for her this year. The big question for her is she's going to have to carry the offense without a lot of other players around her. Her and Aja Pakulba and Megan Bush. They've lost, you know, a lot of good players. So we'll see how well the softball team can do, you know, bouncing, kind of transitioning out of the former era. All right, so we're going to do, since we're only doing one podcast this week, most likely, we're going to do our Gator Guarantees and our Reggie Nelsons and Kyle Jacksons on the same show. We'll start with our Gator Guarantees. Bobby, Phil, you want to wrestle for who goes first? Or something like that?
I'll looks much more formidable than that.
I'll let Phil start it off.
Okay. Well, anyway, I'm going to say, because I like to be wrong in every Gator Guarantee that I make, that the UF men's basketball team will lose both of its games at Arkansas and home versus South Carolina. And I'll say that there's a Devin Downey dagger shot in the home loss.
That's a lot of D's, Phil. Yeah,
yes, it is.
All right. Well, related to that, I'm going on the complete opposite end of the spectrum. I guarantee you they win both games.
Hey, Kyle, what's happening in the NFL playoffs when you picked opposite me? A rare object. I've actually been right.
Yeah, I've not done too well this NFL playoffs. But, Bob?
I'm going to side with Kyle. But what I'm going to say is that Macklin continues his success. They started at LSU. He's going to have double-double scoring in both games, or just double-digit scoring in both games. And against South Carolina, he's going to go for a double-double.
Wow.
All right. Yeah. Well, we'll see about that.
I can be a little ballsy with my guarantees.
Looking back on last week's Gator Guarantees, Phil said that Ronald Powell would commit to USC, decommit from UF and commit to USC. We'll call that a draw for right now. It's still up in the air. It could still happen. I said that a player from the football team would transfer in the next week. That has not happened.
Unless we don't know about it.
Yeah, or maybe they have. We don't know. So I was wrong there. Adam was right. He said that somebody other than Urban Walker, Kenny Boynton, and
Chandler and Tyus.
No, and Tyus. I think Chandler was included in the
I thought there was players. Four. But
all right. But anyway, he said somebody would score 14 points, at least 14 points, who had no business scoring 14 points. That man was Vernon Macklin against LSU. 14 exactly. So
he knew. Adam yelled it to him.
Seemingly arbitrary number, but Dale outsmarted all of us yet again. So he was correct. We'll go 1-1-1 if we're keeping score of those at home for our Gator Guarantees. All right, so now on to what everybody tunes in for. Reggie Nelson, Award for Excellence in the Field of Sport, and Kyle Jackson's Bad Angles of the Week. So why don't we start with Bob? You can pick whichever one you'd like, though.
All right, well, I want to save my Reggie for last, because it's going to seem weird. My Kyle has nothing to do with sports.
Great.
But
that's how we like it on this. Yeah.
It has everything to do with Florida's toll booth system. Me and Kyle's brother were returning from Orlando.
My brother, not Kyle Jackson.
Yeah. Right. Kyle Macy's brother. We were returning from Orlando, and we were kind of going a different route. Saw 417, which connects to 408, which is what we wanted to get on. So we jump on there, and there's a toll booth. We're like, all right, well, you know, fine. I mean, Brad had foolishly left the sun pass at home, so we couldn't just go flying
very
through it.
Very foolish.
So as we get up, we realize there's no sign beforehand. This is as you get up to the toll booth. There's no one working there. You can either do exact change or the sun pass. We don't have exact change. There's no change in the car anymore. So we search around. We finally find it. We find a quarter, a nickel, and three nickels and a dime. I'm pretty sure that adds up to 50 cents. We throw it in there. No green light. I think it only takes quarters.
Only take quarters.
So we just had to go. There was no red light.
Oh, no.
I'm not sure. I mean, Brett could be getting mail, something in the mail saying that he did something illegal.
Was there no gate?
No, there's no gate.
Oh, thank God. Because I've actually seen those. I had a SunPass, but I was like caravan, like a friend was driving behind me, and he had no change, and he didn't have a SunPass, and it was exact change. There was no one there because it was like the middle of the night, and there was a gate. So he was like pretty much screwed, but it was so late at night that I actually like pulled off the road, walked back, and handed him 50 cents.
Wow.
It was ridiculous.
Well, let me say this. My brother's a fool because he could have just grabbed my SunPass for the week. I don't know what he was doing. Anyway, so yeah, Florida toll systems, a little weird sometimes. Phil, you're Kyle.
All right. Well, this is a story that really just completely boggles my mind that I thought I caught a bit of this morning, and it was not a joke. I thought it may have been some kind of
weird joke. I'm still unsure how this is not a Reggie. But
yeah,
continue.
Well, all right. I'm not going to call you racist, Bob, but it seems that there is someone. His name is Don Lewis, whose nickname is apparently Moose, who is planning to start a Caucasians-only men's basketball league with teams in 12 southern cities. And apparently, in an interview, he said, doesn't hate anyone of color, but people of white American-born citizens are in the minority, and here's a league for white players to play fundamental basketball. And the justifications are you have to play in this league, you'd have to be a natural-born citizen with both parents being Caucasian. I couldn't feel this to be more outrageous. It's retarded.
I like it. White people finally get to play professional. I mean, it'll probably look very similar to the WNBA, maybe a little bit faster. But I'm so excited. White people finally get to play basketball.
Okay.
Well, the significance, the level of play would be much higher in this than the WNBA. But is this so different than separating men's and women's sports?
I don't believe that women can't play in the NBA. Uh-huh. It's just, oh, so you think it's just because, yeah.
Black people are better than white people at basketball. Let's be honest. The league wouldn't be 88% black if it wasn't the case. So.
Like, I don't think he's going in there expecting to, like, overtake the NBA and be, like, making – if he does, he's kind of delusional. I mean, I think this is just for a league of people who can't play in the NBA because – well, I would say because they're not good enough, but, I mean, saying they're white kind of goes along with that.
Why don't you just make a semi-pro basketball league, though?
That's pretty much what this is, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, but why do you have to be white to be in it? Like, because, I would have the same problem if it was a all African American league, all like, you know, I don't know, Hispanic league.
Races should form their own, like their only league, and then the champions at the end of it like play each other. It'd be great fun.
Yeah, I mean, I can't be more disgusted by this, but you know, whatever.
I don't know. I think that they should allow people other than whites in it, but have it be marketed, or like not marketed, but like that's the point. I don't know. It's like the same thing as like letting like a girl kick for your football team or something.
It's not a good move,
which happens every once in 10 years or whatever.
All it does is get your team into trouble when the players start being mean to her.
But obviously, this league's really stupid.
Colorado.
Nothing's going to come of it. It's just, I don't know, somebody making headlines.
Well,
so.
It's also interesting in the fact that they're only playing in the South in a white league.
That makes it worse. That definitely makes it worse.
But where else could they form this league? I mean, you can't form this league anywhere else.
All right, before we get in trouble here, let's move on.
This podcast does not reflect the actual thoughts of Alligator.
All right, my Kyle Jackson is going to go to anybody who plays pickup basketball. It's familiar with System of Downs, which is just calling next game, essentially. It's called Downs when you go out and play. I went to Southwest Rec, the rec center here on campus, with a few of our friends, some of which worked for the Alligator, looking to get a game. There were four of us. We picked up one more. We walked up to the court. There were a couple people standing there. Tyler Jett, our baseball writer now, asked one of the kids, hey, does anybody have next on these courts? And they said, oh, we do. And he said, okay, does anybody have next after you? No, nobody is next after me. Go ahead and take it. Thank you very much. Okay, we'll wait for the second game. So, second game rolls around. That team had just previously won. And we go out onto the court, five of us get, you know, ready to play. People are shooting around. And all of a sudden, somebody's like, oh, no, I had downs. And Tyler's like, no, we definitely had downs. And then the same kid who Tyler asked earlier comes back in and tells us that we don't have next. The same exact
what?
Kid. The same kid that he asked was like, no, you guys don't have next. And we're like, yes, we do. We have next. And, you know, I don't want to rehash the race argument, but we were five white kids looking to play against five black kids here. And the other team was also five black kids. So, you know,
you
sometimes...
need your white only league. That's where that would have come in handy.
So obviously they don't want us on the court because they think we all suck, which I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. I hope that doesn't offend anyone out there. And it was pretty much a joke. Like, so then we start arguing. Nothing gets solved because they're just being ridiculous. And then finally the kids who were waiting like to play that were on the other team were just like, just shoot for it. Just shoot for it. So we're like, all right, whatever. So they're like, yeah, just shoot for it. So nobody's, like, taking the ball to shoot for it because nobody wants to, like, miss or whatever. So I'm like, whatever, give me the ball. I'll shoot for it. I grab the ball. I walk out of the three-point line. Everyone's like, okay. I'm like, okay, you're good with this? I'm going to shoot for it. Yes. I make the shot. I'm like, okay, that's it. We're on. And then we still got argued with that we weren't on. No, that didn't count. What are you talking about? Like, obviously, I thought I was going to miss because I don't look like I can play basketball. Whether I can or not, still up in the air. But, like, I went out there, and it was just a joke, because not only did we get pushed off from actually calling downs, we shot for it, made the shot, and we still ended up waiting to the next game.
Oh, that is outrageous. I've never...
Unbelievable.
It's not surprising, because there's, like, weird stuff that goes down at Southwest Rec like that, but I've never heard of a story like that.
Because pickup hoops just degenerates into whoever's more, like, immature and loud and, like, obnoxious right. ends up, like, getting their way. It's like if you're calling a foul or like there's a dispute, it's like whoever like yells and cares the most is going to end up with it. So needless to say, when we went on the court, we were very motivated to beat the team that just scammed us out of downs. And we got out to a big lead, 10-7, going to 11, and we couldn't close it out. We lost by one. But we were very competitive. I thought we held our own.
You lost by one?
Yeah, there's not win by two out there. Also,
that's
no
foolish.
Two-pointers out there.
We have taken away the whites.
That's really
game.
Good.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Once again,
absolutely.
Whites only.
Yeah.
You need it.
So the deck was stacked against us, to say the least, in that situation. All right, so that's enough of our bad news, Kyle Jackson's. Let's move on to our Reggie Nelson's. I'll start since I went last on the last one. Mine's going to go to college basketball parity. This year, there's no really great teams, or they're very few and far between. Most you have pretty much a pack of teams that are very good that are all kind of competing with each other. We've seen teams slide up and down the rankings rather quickly just because there's no real dominant teams this year and everybody kind of has a chance. And it really kind of feels like the first year Florida won their championship where like there are some good teams, but you might see a winner that you didn't think at the beginning of the year. Somebody who was unranked could potentially win. So I enjoy watching all the games. They're all interesting. We just saw Kansas State knock out Texas the other night, the number one. So we'll see what happens this year. But it's hard on betting, but it's good for entertainment.
Yeah, and this should all add up to a great March Madness, and that's what really matters.
Absolutely.
All right, I'll go next here. I got 1.5 Reggie Nelson awards here. We'll start with my big ones going to the Jets. Because I have picked them both weeks, and both weeks leading up to the games, people called me fools. They said that I watched the Jets play. Did I know anything about football? And they had reason to, because I am very bad at picking games. But both times the Jets won, and I'm now 7-1 in NFL picks. So that just shows it's a really crazy year, because I know nothing.
Funny enough, I was listening to a radio show. Marcellus Wiley was on from ESPN. He's 1-7, apparently, in his picks.
It would be funny if it was the same game we flipped. My only loss, for those listeners out there wondering, was the Cardinals-Packers game, which, you know, was pretty close. If only Aaron Rodgers could hit Greg Jennings. Anyway, my honorable mention, Reggie, is going to Ryan Samper, as we mentioned earlier. Really classy guy. We're really sorry he didn't get invited to the Combine. We hope he does really well. Well, I was shopping with my girlfriend the other night at Publix and ran into Mr. Stamper and a lady friend. Don't actually know if they were together or not, but they seem to be. And, you know, it's really interesting sometimes when you run into athletes you cover because some try to be really cool, you know, because we're all students, but, you know, then again, they're athletes, so they're kind of in a class of their own. They feel like they're really cool. They ignore you, or some say hello. It's kind of a mixed bag. And, you know, it's grocery stores out in everyday life. So I was kind of hanging back. I wasn't really sure if I was going to bother him. Like, we didn't really cross ways for a while. But then, like, we passed once in an aisle, and he stopped, said hello, seemed to recognize me since we'd interviewed each other. Or I only interviewed him. Like, I did interview him a couple times. Stopped, asked, said hello, asked how I was doing, shook my hand, and we kind of went our ways. But, I mean, it was just really nice to, like, have some kind of respect that, like, I'm not, like, this low-class human being who just, like, interviews him all the time.
Right.
So, thank you, Ryan Stamper.
We love Ryan Stamper. And, yeah, it's nice, like, that there's recognition sometimes. So it's not just, like, I don't know. It's nice to keep the illusion that we're all students in the same class every once in a while.
Right.
So. Bob.
I agree. Oh, my Reggie. Bob. This is going to come as quite the surprise. It goes to Gilbert Arenas. I disagree with everything Gilbert Arenas did, but what he did do was he helped my fantasy basketball team out. He knew I was in desperate need of a point guard, and there was not many to find in the free agent market. So what happens? He goes out, gets suspended, won't be back this season, I'm going to guess. Randy Foy, chilling in the free agent market, I say, I'll go pick you up. And he's been great ever since, averaging probably close to 20 points, eight assists, exactly what my team needed. Thank you, Randy Foy, but thank you more, Gilbert Arenas, for getting yourself in trouble.
Well, not every day you earn a Reggie Nelson for drawing guns in the locker room, but Gilbert Arenas seemed to have done that. One thing I do want to say about that whole situation is, like, I've always, like, Gilbert Arenas is entertaining. I've always not liked him because I've always felt that he takes it too far and he's very, like, in your face and not very respectful, stuff, things of that nature. But people just ate up his act, like, for years. It was like, oh, Gilbert Arenas, so great, Agent Zero. And then this happens, and now every columnist wants to write about how, like, it went too far, like, it slid too far, like, we all should have, or, like, it seemed like they weren't taking the blame, though, like, oh, I let it slide too far, it's like, everyone's let it slide too far, but it's the same media who was building up his character the whole time, who, you know, was yelling hibachi on SportsCenter and going nuts every time he did something funny, like, promoting the YouTube video of him betting $20,000 against Deshaun Stevenson in a three-point shooting contest. So I just it annoys me when the media has knee-jerk back and forth reactions. It's like, if you were, this is the same Gilbert Arenas, like, it's nothing totally out of character for him. It's like, either you liked him or you didn't. He had a previous gun incident with the NBA, and, like, for you to just look over that the whole time and then all of a sudden say, we should have seen this coming the whole time, it's like, well, where was your column, you know, last year, 2 years ago? So, I don't know.
No, I certainly hear that and agree. I never really went either way with Gilbert Arenas. It was like, you know, whatever, he's a character. But, like, so, yeah, I already thought some of this was outrageous. And then, thank God, everybody realizes this is way out of line and not cool. Because if anybody argued for him, then that would be very bad.
Yeah, like I said, the only plus is that he helped my fantasy team by opening a point guard spot for Randy Foy.
All right, yeah. Well, I think that about wraps it up for the show. We're coming in a couple minutes short, which is depressing. Anybody have any thoughts to kick this to the 45-minute mark?
Well, I really just hope that the NFL playoffs are exciting this weekend. There's been, like, 8 games and 2 decent ones. So I'm really just hoping that I don't have high hopes for Colts-Jets, but I think Colts are going to blow them out. And I think that the Vikings-Saints hopefully will be pretty good. I am one of those rare people who liked Brett Favre, so, it's, you know, I think the Vikings...
All right, you know what? Quick Super Bowl predictions. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm going, because I really just want this to happen, Vikings over Colts.
Okay.
Well, since I initially picked before the season Ravens over the Vikings, it was coming pretty close to that. I was getting kind of excited. But you know what? The Jets are Ravens 2.0, so I'm going to go Jets over the Vikings.
Oh, my God.
Sticking with exactly what I thought, but with a different team.
Rex Ryan will be.
I love Rex Ryan.
I wouldn't mind seeing that, but I'm going to go Colts over Saints. I think Peyton Manning's the best quarterback left. He gives you an extra, like, degree of being able to win no matter what defense you're playing or anything. And the Colts defense has been looked pretty good last week in their first game, holding the, who'd they play, Ravens to 3 points.
Yeah.
So obviously the Ravens, not exactly a high-powered offense. They do have Ray Rice, though, and they pretty much shut him down.
Joe Flacco really just let down the Ravens.
When we were kicking around ideas to talk about today, I don't know why none of us suggest this, but there is the whole Wandy Pierre-Louis incident.
Oh, yeah. That whole thing happened.
Any thoughts?
Well, Wandy was originally accused by what I believe claims to be his girlfriend. She's listed in the police report as his girlfriend.
Yeah, it's complicated.
Yeah, I think sometimes it says girlfriend or ex-girlfriend.
Sure, okay, a woman.
Starlet,
who may have
her name.
Been romantically interested with Wandy, filed a complaint against Wandy, claiming that early Sunday morning, I believe I read around 5:30 a.m., that the woman claimed that Wandy kicked in the door, found her with another man, got really mad at her, yelled at her, and started to near choke her, and said that he could kill her. And so she, like, fought away, went to a neighbor's house, called police, gave him that statement. Then one day later, she claimed that Wandy is no harm to anyone in the public and got his bond way reduced. The last I saw, his initial charges were 4 felonies and a misdemeanor, but now it appears all charges will be dropped because she seems to completely flip her mind.
Huntley Johnson is one heck of a lawyer. I'll say that much. Man can get them out of anything. People just seem to change their mind. But I think one of the big things to note is that she was being choked, and she was able to get away from his grasp, just like many people, many wide receivers have done over the years against him. You seem like he's going to be able to wrap him up, but oh no, they get away, just like his girlfriend.
Oh,
Bob, alleged domestic abuse is a very serious crime. Yeah, right. If anybody gets offended by domestic abuse, which was later dropped by the plaintiff, then I don't know, our listeners are a little too sensitive. But had it gone down and he got arrested, yeah, we shouldn't joke about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no.
Obviously, this is a messed up situation.
Just the number of women who seemingly file really bad charges against men and then change their mind. Now, I'm completely against domestic violence, obviously. And if something happens to you, you should completely file it. I'm all for that. But your story should not be able to change in a day. No. Unless there's some ridiculous conspiracy theory where, like, you know, somebody's coming to you and telling you to change your story, which I don't believe. It's just really bad. Like, it makes women as a whole look bad. Like, because when I see a story like this, I usually, you know, I say innocent until proven guilty, but I a little bit believe the woman because these charges sound so ridiculous. There's that Carl Johnson incident.
Carl Johnson stuff, obviously.
It's another great example. And it's detailed, too. It's not like, oh, he hit me. It's like all these really extreme things.
Well, because whether or not it's true, it's still on this guy's, like, public record, so to speak. Like there'll always be that complaint that's filed, or it's always going to be – you're going to be able to check the articles on the website. And you're just dragging the guy's name through the mud before anything happens. And it's just – it's unfortunate, and it shouldn't happen. I feel bad for guys like Wandy or Carl Johnson where if nothing happened, which I'm going to assume if they just drop the charges and change the story that nothing did happen – then you're really just putting this guy through something. He's a public figure. People are going to care, and it's really just a shame because, like you said, it's innocent until proven guilty, but not really.
Yeah.
You kind of assume it to be true. When you
I had a former linebackers coach at my high school. He didn't teach that. He taught another high school. But after the season over the summer, there he got arrested for, like, having sex with one of his students. And, like, this girl was claiming that, like, he would always, like, call her into his room and, like, they would do stuff. And then later comes out that, like, that she just wanted to transfer. She wanted to transfer schools and said, like, and her parents wouldn't let her. So she figured if she made up a story, she would have to transfer. So she had made up the whole story just so that she can transfer high schools. But this man's name for over a year was dragged through the dirt saying that he had sex with one of his students. Right. And, you know, I don't know where he's at now. I hope he got a job again. But, I mean, it's just anytime his name comes up, the first thing everyone thinks of is him having sex with a student. But that didn't actually happen.
Phil, you're a law school hopeful. What are the repercussions to filing a report and then going back on that a day later? Because are there some?
Yeah, there's supposed to be. It's really tough in these type scenarios. I know in these two specific areas, women who are claiming either domestic violence or rape, because they don't want to make women feel like they have to be scared of filing reports. Because obviously, like, usually traditionally men are stronger. So, like, they want women to be able to be forthcoming about these events, because a lot of women, as shown in, like, research and stuff, won't come out about domestic violence. They just keep letting it happen. So I want women to come out and say this. I don't know what the rule is. There is, like, a crime that's, like, filing a false police report. And I think it's, like, a misdemeanor. But, you know, it's so people don't do this. It's like when people claim that, you know, you steal something from them, you know, and you didn't do it. I know that they're very wary of filing those type of things in domestic violence and rape because they don't want people to be scared about doing it. But I mean, yeah, I definitely agree there should be something being able to, when it's such an extreme flip. You know, it's not like she said this and then witnesses just varied the account a little bit. It's this person coming out against a man saying all this stuff and then flipping 180 degrees and saying nothing should be filed against him. It's totally outrageous.
The one thing I'll say is, I mean, I don't know why it happens, how it happens. This stat kind of amazed me. This stat came out before Janoris Jenkins was arrested, but Huntley Johnson had handled, before Janoris Jenkins arrest, so there's been a couple since then, he had handled 23 out of 24 cases involving UF football players, and 21 of those 23 he's handled, the charges were dropped.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've seen that same statistic.
I don't know. Well, if people, I mean, obviously this can't just, like, I'm not a huge, like, he's just going out there just throwing money at everybody, getting them, drop cases. But it's just really weird that, like, people either have, you know, filing so many false claims, people change their minds so quickly. It's just really weird around, especially since everyone's skeptical as soon as someone from, a major college football team gets arrested and then nothing happens to them. It's always kind of, everyone's got skepticals around it, and, like, having that many charges dropped is kind of, just kind of feeds that mentality.
Yeah, no, I mean, you kind of hit on it, but there's two camps that I've seen from people talking about that, and these are two extremes. It probably falls somewhere in the middle. The first extreme is that football players always get athletes in general, when they get charged, they get leniency. They get special deals that normal people wouldn't get, and some skeptics say that. The other, in the complete opposite extreme, people say that athletes get picked on by police, that they get charged with things that they shouldn't have, and that they have special treatment from normal people, but in a bad way. I would say it's probably somewhere closer in the middle, but that statistic really is crazy. The interesting thing to look at, though, would be if you just took, like, the stats of what happens to all crimes kind of in general, or all crimes of people our age, university age. Yeah. Because a lot of times, like, a lot of football players, even if they do go through some crime, they plead guilty, there's some kind of first-time offender program. But a lot of those same programs are available to just normal students of our age. They just don't get as much publicity.
Yeah, and I've heard, you know, we've been on campus 4 years. We've got to know a lot of different people who are, you know, either athletes, close to athletes, whatever. And, you know, I know I've definitely heard stories from people about football players having run-ins with the law, and seemingly they call a phone number and it all goes away. And, like, I'm definitely not saying this is the case with the Wandy situation, but with the 21 out of 23 drop charges, I think that's what I'm leaning towards. You know, that statistic is definitely affected by who they know, the type of power that they have in the town of Gainesville, because University of Florida is Gainesville and football is kind of the University of Florida. So I think that it's unfortunate that it goes down like that, but I would lean heavily towards believing that there are at least some scenarios where that is the case. So Phil's got something else pulled up that we neglected to talk about. We're hitting you with all the hard news late in the show.
Yeah. Definitely.
You thought you're like, oh, it's finally over. No, wrong. We tricked you.
This was a really crazy story that I came across yesterday afternoon. Steve Babbitt, who is the, I believe that's how you say its name, who's the sideline reporter for the Gator Radio Network, who does radio broadcasts of UF football games and such, was arrested on charges of child pornography, one count of receipt and distribution, and one count of possession. He has apparently, Florida released a statement that he was suspended when they first learned of the charges back in November, and now he's been charged, he's been fired. Not a whole lot of info. We can just tell you that Babbitt appeared before a judge Tuesday, was released on $100,000 bond, and his trial is March the 1st. And if convicted, he faces some pretty stiff penalties. They've cracked up the penalties for child pornography recently. It would be a mandatory minimum of 5 years, I believe, each count. So that'd be a minimum of 10 if proven guilty. Really crazy case. I don't have a whole lot of analysis. Just shocking.
He did plead guilty. Or not guilty. Sorry, not guilty. He pleaded not guilty. So I guess he's going to fight it.
Did you know him at all, Phil, or did you have any...
No, I really had no interactions with him.
I've always seen him around.
Yeah.
And I've always kind of been like, oh, I don't really know who that is. And then, like, someone's like, Steve Babbitt got arrested. I was like, I don't really know who it is. And I saw the picture. I was like, oh, that's Steve Babbitt. Yeah. Well, he just seemed like a nice guy, I guess. But I guess...
Who knows? Don't know your neighbors.
I mean, I had no interaction with him whatsoever. The name wasn't even all that familiar to me. It's like something I heard, but, like, I didn't know who he was at all. So, honestly, when I saw it, I wasn't, like, shocked or anything. Like, I had no predisposition towards him.
Right.
If it was somebody, like, we hung out with all the time and we knew real well, obviously, it'd be insane. But, you know, for strangers, it's like this kind of stuff sadly does happen. And, I don't know. It's weird because it's in your town and your immediate, you know, environment. But, other than that, I think we've hit you with all the hard news that we have for one day. I thought we weren't going to make it to the 45-minute mark, and we went almost 55 for you, so it goes to show what I know. Check out our podcast on iTunes if you're streaming it off the site. If not, you can leave comments on our blogs on our website, alligator.org. Send us an email, podcast@alligator.org. Drop us an iTunes review. Get in touch with us one way or another. Through all the various social networking stuff that we have going on. And I'm going to lay out one challenge to the listeners. I tend to do this from time to time. We have a confirmed date for the Mary Wise podcast. It's going to be February 3rd, a Wednesday. So it'll go up either later that Wednesday or Thursday. If you have any questions that you want us to ask, go ahead and email it to us, podcast@alligator.org. If they're good, we'll pick one or two good questions that the listeners want to hear us ask. And we'll ask her those questions. So, anybody out there
who's... Are we going to need to get dressed up for that? I feel as though we can't just come like looking like slums like we usually do since no one can see us. Well, I feel as though we probably should look like, you know, decent.
Well, it's also going to be recorded, I believe, on campus, correct?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So, we're going all out for this one.
Well, yeah. You don't want to bring Mary Wise into our little studio.
Yeah, this is a nice little abode, I'd say. Bring her in.
Nice is a stretch, but...
You're going to want to move the foot over the carpet stain so she can't see that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll cover that up. Don't worry. But since Barry's not here, you know what? End the show, Maestri!
All right, with that, we're out.
End the show, Barry!